It seems to me that one of the great elements of the Catholic tradition is this recognition of mystery, right? So one of the exciting things about being Catholic is you can study this for your entire life and always feel like there's more to learn, right, and more to discover. Go.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, I'm Joseph Pierce, and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast at the Augustine Institute. And my guest today is my esteemed colleague here at the Augustine Institute, Michael Barber. And for those of you that don't know Michael, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background information as to who it is, who's my guest today. So Michael Barber is Associate Professor of Scripture and Theology here at the Augustine Institute. He received his PhD in Theology from Fuller Theological Seminary. He has authored scholarly articles for academic journals such as Journal of Biblical Literature and Journal for the Study of Paul and His Letters. His most recent project is The Apostle Paul, Catholic Perspectives in Pauline Theology, which is co-authored with Brant Petrie, another scholar here at the Augustine Institute, and John Kincaid, and that book will be coming out soon from Erdmans. In addition to engaging the world of scholarship, Dr. Barber is known for his ability to translate his research into terms accessible for all audiences and is therefore a regular speaker at national Catholic conferences and parish events. Among other things, he has written popular level books on the Psalms and the Book of Revelation. He lives in Aurora, Colorado with his wife Kimberly and their six young children. Michael, welcome.
Joseph, thanks so much for having me here. You know, it's funny, we're both new here, sort of, right?
We started at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that great?
In the summer of 2018, yes, we're new kids on the block here.
And
it's a
great
block to be a new kid on.
Is it ever? I feel like I won the lottery.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've had the pleasure of breakfasting together on a couple of occasions, mm-hmm. and we've had long conversations about all and sundry. And it makes it clear to me that we could talk on all sorts of topics. But we thought about this and we thought, well, maybe we'll talk today about our own journeys to the faith. And what I think is interesting about this is I'm a convert to the faith and you're a cradle Catholic. But that doesn't mean that we have entirely different journeys. There were similar journeys. And I always think that cradle Catholics still have at some point to have some sort of conversion experience, to actually make it their own by the grace of God. So perhaps we can begin by you just telling us something about your own journey. What brought you from where you were to where you are today?
Sure, and I appreciate you mentioning the fact that a cradle Catholic certainly has to be a convert too.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not the case that conversion is a one-time event. It's an ongoing reality in our lives. But for me, I can point back to when I was in junior high, just finishing up junior high. I grew up in a devout Catholic family. My parents are veritable saints. We grew up down the street from the local Catholic church. You can see the tabernacle from my parents' driveway.
Wow.
You hear the bells all throughout the day. Went to 8 years of Catholic school. But at the Catholic school I went to, we weren't really being instructed in the faith. So it was a Catholic school, but it was a very sort of watered down, if you will, approach to Catholicism. It was really, I think, well-intentioned, but the teachers didn't really have the tools to instruct us. And so by the time I was in eighth grade, I remember vividly, and my parents were concerned about this, wondering, why are we doing all of this,
right?
I know I ought to go to Mass, but I don't want to go to Mass, right? I know I ought to pray, but I don't really know why. It felt like a duty that had to be performed,
mm-hmm.
a chore.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was the devotion there and a certain sentiment that you develop over your childhood, a sort of Catholic ethos, but it was sort of devoid of reason, right? And it wasn't until I heard a lecture by a Catholic theologian named Scott Hahn, who was a new convert to the Catholic Church. He delivered a presentation at a parish that my uncle, Terry Barber, had recorded for this fledgling new organization called St. Joseph's Communications. And he gave the recording to my dad. Up until this point, Terry was only interested in producing Archbishop Fulton Sheen's material. But this talk blew him away. And he gave it to my dad, and my dad gave it to me and encouraged me to listen to it. And it was the last thing that I wanted to hear.
Right.
My religion was baseball, let's be honest, right? And I had no interest in listening to a lecture on cassette tape, if you remember those days, of all things. But one Saturday, my baseball game got rained out.
Michael, just interrupt me.
Yes.
I remember the days before cassette tapes.
Yes, 8-tracks. 8-tracks, vinyls, yes.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
please,
No. So, my dad and Terry were both audiophiles, so we had exposure to that in our childhood. But anyway, so my first exposure to sort of a robust intellectual approach to the Catholic faith was through Scott Hahn's presentation, which was not really, you know, meant to be a scholarly lecture. But for the first time, I understood the New Testament in light of the Old Testament.
Right.
I understood the imagery of the Mass, and it made me want to go to Mass for the first time.
Wow.
And I remember about 2 weeks after listening to that, I told my dad, this is what I want.
Wow.
I want to get my PhD in this. And I've been on that track ever since, and I'm so grateful that someone explained to me why we do what we do, because had that not happened to me, I don't know that I'd be Catholic today.
Parallel paths are not so much mine as yours, but my wife's and yours, because my wife, actually, like you, is from Southern California, and she was also a cradle Catholic, was also going through a lukewarm period, you know, questioning things. She went to a lecture by Scott Hahn. So the irony here, and then she went on to do a master's in theology at Steubenville because she became a disciple of Scott Hahn. Right. So what I find actually sort of ironic, in a wonderful, beautiful sense, is that Scott Hahn is, of course, a convert from Protestantism.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have this example of him being involved in the conversion, if we can use that word, of cradle Catholics into a fuller understanding of their own faith, which I think is really, really beautiful.
Sure.
So obviously cut you off in your tracks there, but obviously that shows up to a point. The rest is history because, you know, you went on, you've obviously got your master's and your PhD, and here you are teaching theology at graduate level at the Augustine Institute.
I mean, there are different, you know, twists and turns along the way, but I never really had a doubt about what the goal was. And, you know, thanks be to God, there was Scott Hahn there, because a lot of scholars, a lot of academics sort of turn their nose up at explaining things in accessible terms.
Right.
Because whenever you do that,
right,
inevitably you have to simplify.
Yeah, well,
and you can't get to all the nuances.
No, and this sort of academic snobbery is something that you have to face. I mean, C.S. Lewis faced it, you know, as soon as he started writing popular apologetics and heaven forbid, even worse literature, and even worse children's books.
Right?
At that point, you know, he lost credibility.
Sure.
And yet, of course, as a scholar, he was always as good a scholar. He just had ability to talk to other people.
Sure.
So in Chesterton, you know, who didn't have his doctorate, but so profound. So yeah, we will all address that. But I think one thing that both of you and I both have in common in our journeys is a growing realization of the inextricable union of faith and reason.
Right.
That we don't have to choose, or we don't have to, if you like, use Orwellian double thing, having two mutually contradictory views in our heads at the same time.
Sure.
And don't ask too many deep questions because it will unsettle you.
Right.
You realize actually at the deepest level, faith and reason are in harmony and they dovetail. So would you like maybe say something about the role that faith and reason had in your journey in general, but also perhaps the lessons that can teach everybody as the universal applicability of how coming to terms with that inextricable union, that marriage, if you like, between fides et ratio, can transform people's lives and the understanding that the faith is rational.
Right. It seems to me that one of the great elements of the Catholic tradition is this recognition of mystery, right? That it's not an embarrassment to say we can't fully wrap our minds around God or Scripture. Matthias Schaben, the great 19th century theologian, said that if God could be completely comprehended by us, then he wouldn't have much to recommend himself to us,
He wouldn't be God, right?
Exactly.
If we can wrap ourselves around him, we're bigger than he is, right?
So one of the exciting things about being Catholic is you can study this for your entire life and always feel like there's more to learn and more to discover. Right. The wonder just continues to grow in you.
Right.
And sometimes it means you can't put all the pieces together.
Right, but see, this is a tricky situation here, though, because mystery does not imply something which is irrational.
Right, exactly.
Right, so how do we square that circle? Right? Why is something which is mysterious, in other words, something which we cannot encapsulate rationally because of our own limitations, how is that not a contradiction of reason?
Right, sure. Well, I guess the image that I'd use is the one that Matthias Schaben uses when he says that you can't look directly into the sun.
Right.
Right? It's too bright.
Right.
Well, that's the way a knowledge about God is, right? You can't look directly. It's blinding.
Right.
Not because there's darkness, but because of our incapacity to take it all in.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So if you were to say that you can't look directly at the sun because the sun's not really there, you'd obviously be an irrational statement, right?
Exactly.
That's a very extremely good analogy.
Yeah. I mean, you can see the light all around you, but you can't look directly into the source.
Right. But let
right.
me but
see,
let,
see it all.
Let me throw you a curveball, mainly because curveballs are just fun, right?
I love curveballs.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was Ronald Knox that said, and it's one of my favorite quips of Ronald Knox. He says that mysticism begins in mist and ends in schism.
Right.
So in other words, you know, the embrace and the acceptance of mystery as a reality.
Right.
Yes. But if you like rooting or basing your faith on mystery to the exclusion of, say, philosophy and theology and that which is rooted in a rational dialectic is dangerous. So how would you, say, maybe differ or distinguish between mystery, bona fide understanding of mystery, and mysticism in a heterodox sense? Because, of course, we have Christian mystics, Catholic mystics, saints who are mystics.
Sure.
But in that case, their mysticism always complies with and is in accordance with orthodoxy. There's no mystical vision which contradicts the rational understanding of the faith. So how would you distinguish between mystery, bona fide, and mysticism, mala fide?
Humility.
Oh, very good answer.
Yeah. I would say that what you see in those who remain in the embrace of the church is a willingness to say, I'm not the final arbiter of truth. I am not Catholic, Joseph, because I've looked around at all the world religions and in my infallible estimation decided that the Catholic Church gets it about right. I'm not Catholic because I think that my Michael Barber's reason is the final arbiter of truth.
Yeah.
I'm actually Catholic because I know I'm fallible, right? And so at the end of the day, what I need to recognize is truth is not something that I can contain in my experience, but I need to rely on a community of others who I trust God has guided. I'm not an island. It's not just the sense of the faithful in terms of those people around me today will take a popular straw poll and figure out what, but I'm talking about a tradition that goes back 2,000 years.
Yeah.
People who have encountered Christ. So I don't want the Catholic Church to agree with me. I want to agree with the Catholic Church.
Now you elaborated upon beautifully.
Yeah.
And eloquently, but encapsulated in the one word, humility. And it seems to me, you know, that the pride is the belief that truth is within you. You know, Eastern mysticism seems to be sort of mixed up with all of that. The pride is that truth is within you, whereas humility is that truth is outside of you, and you have to kneel in its presence in order to actually, you know, get some sort of understanding of it. You know, and I think only perhaps on the Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute will you get a quip from Ronald Knox, followed by words of eloquence from a theologian of your caliber, and then the words of a pop song by U2.
Oh.
If you want to kiss the sky, you have to learn how to kneel
from
mysterious ways.
Okay? Sure, it's a great album.
Yeah.
And you know that as an Englishman. I would say,
although
you know,
he's Irish, but
we're Irish, and it's very European.
If you live on my side of the pond, the distinction between English and Irish is
I know that.
You don't want to get it confused.
I know that. trust me, I know that. I'm sorry, I misspoke. But
that's okay.
I didn't mean to say that you two is English. I meant to say, broadly speaking, right. You two is huge in Europe, right?
Yes.
But I would just say this: learning then. From the community, learning from others who have had this encounter with Christ is, I think, so essential for a proper understanding of mystery. And in my own life, it's been so powerful for me. And so that's why I wanted to hear a little bit about your story, because these mysteries are so profound, we can't take them all in at once. And I know for you, it was a long process of sort of assimilating and thinking through various writers. So I'd like to learn from your experience, if you could share a little bit here.
Michael, I would love to. But we're out of time.
Oh, no!
But the good thing is, I'm very happy to have had that. You set the stage, you're the guest. But I'll tell you what, it might be an idea, is that we might have you back here as a guest presenter on the Faith and Culture podcast, and then I can be your victim.
I'll be the guest host.
Exactly. You be the guest host, and I'll answer your questions.
Sounds so fantastic.
Maybe that's something for next time.
That's great, but I can't do it with an English accent.
Well, good, because I have no intention of giving my answers in an American accent. But thanks once again for joining me in this Faith and Culture podcast. It's been a delight to have my colleague, Dr. Michael Barber, with us today. Hopefully we'll have him back in future. Thanks for all of you for listening to this latest Faith and Culture podcast at the Augustine Institute. I'm your host, Joseph Pierce. Goodbye and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.